Coming up on Tech News Today, Sony unveils new Vita and Vita TV, what Apple will announce on Tuesday, and how Facebook is going to get more money out of television. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, September 9th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by TechServe. TechServe assists U.S. businesses of all sizes with their technology needs, including Apple, Avid, Adobe, and HP solutions. Visit TechServe.com/TNT and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 20% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT9. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use, doesn't require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit TNT.Ting.com. That's TNT.Ting.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we bring you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Sony announced on a live stream this morning a new PlayStation Vita coming to Japan October 10th for 18,980 yen. That's about $190 US. The Vita PCH 2000 comes with 1 gigabyte of onboard storage, is 15% lighter, 20% thinner, and claims an additional hour of battery life. Sony also revealed the PS Vita TV. That's a set-top box that can play Vita titles on a television as well as connect to a PS4 to play games remotely. The Vita TV will retail at 9,480 yen. That's about $95 US from November 14th in Japan.
Xbox Music for iOS and Android is launching today and will rival major streaming music providers the likes of Spotify and RDO. As a customer, the first 6 months of streaming will be free to attract users who can then upgrade to the Xbox Music Pass, which is $10 a month or $100 a year, which includes mobile access. You don't get mobile access otherwise. It's not yet clear if streaming will be free or the Xbox One version on the Xbox One version that launches this November.
There's a new app for iPad that's making the news, and it's called Coast. Surprisingly, this app is not about the trials and tribulations of the 35-year-old soap by the name of Coast. It's actually a web browser by Opera. Now, Coast by Opera is an almost Chrome-less browser that relies mostly on gestures to navigate. A left or right swipe replicates back and forward buttons. Bookmarks are displayed as giant squares. The Opera team says it's looking into bringing the browser to other platforms outside of iOS.
Verizon's legal challenge against the FCC's 2011 open internet rules goes to court today in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. Verizon argues the rules are a, quote, arbitrary and capricious restriction of Verizon's free speech rights. One of the judges hearing the case, David Tittle, authored the 2010 opinion that struck down the FCC's attempt to punish Comcast for net neutrality violations.
I love that word, capricious. Facebook is giving a few media partners access to a brand new public feed API and keyword insights API. The former lets a network like CNN or BuzzFeed see a real-time fire hose of public posts mentioning a specific word. Hey, that sounds like a different service. The keyword insights API aggregates all of the public posts mentioning a specific word and then provides anonymous stats about the age, location, and gender of the user posting the updates. The tools are designed to help news networks capitalize on responses to current events, but also understand more about their own audience metrics and engagement for primetime programming.
Google's trying to work out a deal with the European Commission to avoid a $5 billion fine. More than 2 months ago, the European Commission asked Google to address antitrust concerns, such as blocking competitors in its search results and favoring Google's own services in its search results. EU Commission spokesperson Jonathan Todd said the Commission is assessing Google's proposal, but didn't give any details as to what's in the proposal. Maybe unicorns and candy?
Really? Nah, probably not. Get ready for ads on Instagram. Facebook's photo sharing service has topped 150 million users and is preparing to start displaying ads by the end of this year. Instagram posted that 50 million of their users joined in the last 6 months.
Hey, remember all that talk about Amazon working on the new smartphone?
Yeah,
maybe cool. It might even be free because Amazon does things like that in order to entice a lot more customers to the Amazon marketplace. Well, yesterday, Amazon told All Things D that, no, it indeed had no plans to launch a phone this year. And even if it did, it wouldn't be free. I don't know if they said it that way, but I like to think so. Although, well into the tablet market, Amazon reportedly still is trying to weigh what type of business model and product would set it apart in this competitive world of smartphones we live in.
So, we're totally not launching a phone, and when we do, it won't be free. Google, Facebook, and Yahoo have filed suit with the U.S. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court requesting the right to publicly disclose the number and type of national security requests the companies have received from the U.S. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Director James Clapper has agreed to release aggregate numbers, but this has not satisfied the companies. All three companies, along with several dozen others, sent a similar request in a letter to Congress and the U.S. president back in July.
Seagate announced a new hard drive designed for mobile devices like tablets. The Seagate Ultra Mobile Hard Drive is a 2.5-inch hard disk drive, but is just 5 millimeters thick and could offer capacities of up to 500 gigabytes with a max transfer rate of 600 megabytes per second. The new drives are paired with Seagate's mobile enablement kit, which allows a spinning disk to survive things like vibration, shock, and even a fall. Seagate says the Ultra Mobile Hard Drive also consumes very low power, lower than that of most SSDs, actually.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by TechServe, New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and technology provider. They've served creative professionals at all levels, from individual customers all the way up to Fortune 100 companies. TechServe carries a full range of Apple products, iPhones, iPads, MacBooks, all the stuff you would expect. They also have a range of partnerships with top vendors to facilitate flexible, efficient, and creative solutions for all your business needs. Now, if you're like, what does that mean? Well, let's say that you run, I don't know, the Delta terminal in LaGuardia Airport in New York or Toronto or Minneapolis, and you have a crazy idea. You want to put iPads at every seat in the terminal so people can check their email and get real-time flight updates and even order food. You can do it with TechServe. TechServe helped out OTG Management. They're the hospitality company that runs those Delta terminals to do just that. If you've been in any of those terminals, they've turned it into a wonderland of iPads at every seat in the lounge. TechServe sells, supports, personalizes, configures, and manages massive iPad projects from the Delta terminals to schools with 700 chef instructors to an operation that delivered personally configured iPads to 3,000 cable technicians. TechServe is able to do full lifecycle management for all of your technology needs by providing the devices that you need. Get them up and running, teach you how to use them, and maintain them so they're working efficiently and they don't abandon you. They give you ongoing support. If your enterprise does have a problem, you just give them a call. If your business is considering integrating iOS technology at your workplace, contact TechServe today. It's TechServe. And you'll get a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. That's techserve.com/TNT. TechServe will help you assess your current or future iPad needs and give you advice to make your enterprise a success. That's techserve.com/TNT. We thank TechServe for their support of Tech News Today. Perfect segue from our enterprise-level sponsor, TechServe, to our enterprise-level guest today, host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, Father Robert Ballesteyer. How's it going, man?
It's actually pretty good. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. Appreciate you taking a Monday, you know? Sometimes it's hard for guests to get in on a Monday.
Well, I don't like waking up before 11, but, you know, I'll make an exception for TNT.
We are honored that you got out of bed for us today. Let's start off with that Sony news. You, like me, I think are more interested in that little set-top box than just the new Vita.
Yeah, there's going to be a thinner, smaller Vita for your hands. Who cares about that? But Sony announced about a new set-top box called the PlayStation Vita TV. As you mentioned before, it's around $95 to $100, set to launch in Japan on November 14th. And since it's called the Vita, it's got a slot for Vita games. It also plays PSP games, gives you access to Sony's Music Unlimited, Video Unlimited, and other apps like Hulu and Twitter. PlayStation Vita TV also connects to PlayStation controllers. The set-top box itself is really tiny. In the promo video, it's dwarfed by a PS3 controller. The device also allows for remote play for the PlayStation 4. So if you get a PS4... you can send the video output from one of those, from your PS4, to one of these boxes in your house. A separate bundle comes with a DualShock 3 controller and an 8 gigabyte memory card. It's about $143. Although not all PS Vita games are going to be supported, because the DualShock 3 controller doesn't have Vita's touch-sensitive hardware that's on the back of certain on the back of the device. The PS4, by the way, Sony did give a launch date for Japan, February 22nd. So this device, the PS Vita TV, is coming out well before the PS4 will in Japan. November 15th is when the U.S. is getting the PS4. Padre, do you expect the set-top box to make its way outside of Japan? Because it seems pretty dang cool.
It seems cool, but here's the thing. That field is really, really crowded. There's a lot of set-top box manufacturers. A lot of them are doing things like this. And it's not as if Sony can depend on the Vita sales to drive this. I mean, if anything, this might drive future Vita sales, which they could really use. The other thing about this is, I used to be down on any manufacturer that had a closed environment. You know, I want my box, my Roku box, whatever it is, to access all the content I have, be it Hulu or Netflix. I think we've actually gotten to the point where you want more of a closed environment. You want a really easy to use interface. You want an experience for people to have something akin to the Apple Store. And I actually like the fact that Sony is doing that. They're saying, look, buy our device, buy our bundle, and we'll deliver everything to you. Now, the question becomes, what kind of deals are they going to sign? How much content can I actually get over the subscription service?
My question with this thing is, how do you explain it in a way that makes people want it? Because as Father Robert pointed out, this space is getting crowded when you think of it as a small mobile games on a television. You've got Ouya, you've got NVIDIA, you've got a ton of others out there, usually Android-based, trying to sell you that cheap game console. But this is also an extender for PS4, and that's something those others don't have. And I think one of the more compelling things about it is not just that you could play your PS4 games on a different TV remotely, but also that you can watch those entertainment services. You can run Netflix on this. Well, conceivably, if it comes to the U.S., you will. I think it does have Hulu in the Japanese version. So it could be positioned as a competitor to the Rokus and Apple TVs of the world. And in fact, everybody wanted that Xbox extender and they didn't get it. But that's not Sony's strategy with the PS4. They're not pitching it so much as the home entertainment center the way Microsoft has been.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a lot. I think probably actually a large number of people who have a device like an Apple TV or a Hulu, myself included, is really only watching a few things a lot of the time. It's not so much that we need the variety of many, many, many different apps. It's just having that capability is really, really nice. Now, yeah, I mean, I currently don't really have a whole lot of gaming capabilities, except I can play Angry Birds on my Roku, which I never do. But if you're already a PlayStation fan, you've got games, yes, they won't perhaps all play on this particular box, but if you have your favorite ones, and it's only $100, that seems like a pretty good deal for somebody who's like, oh, okay, there's Netflix or, you know, some sort of Twitter capabilities, and I have all my games. This seems like a pretty good deal. It looks nice, too.
Yeah, bringing it over the library from the Vita over to your television, that's one thing. Just looking at this, how tiny this device is, I'm really kind of curious if Sony's going to bother to put these into their TVs to really set these things apart. Because at this point, TVs are a commodity device. You got your smart hubs. You got everything that has these smart capabilities. But if you have a television or a set-top box that lets you move or lets you wirelessly connect your PS4 to it, the capabilities you're bringing to a television, a display that's pretty much just doing nothing at this point, could be huge to be a differentiator, because everything is the same at this point. If everybody's got a set-top box, it doesn't matter. But this capability and this game library, I think, is just a huge difference maker compared to Apple TV or Ouya, because they've got developers, but not like Sony.
Right. It's really going to come down to interface. If they can make an easy-to-use interface, something that I can give to my mom, to my dad, to my non-tech-savvy aunt, and have them set it up immediately, or if, as you say, it's integrated into the next TV that they buy, then yeah, you know, this, it's a great price point. It looks like it's going to do everything I more or less want it to do. And if it could be just tacked on to all my future products, then yeah, Sony's got a hit, which they desperately need because, I mean, what's the last thing that Sony did that really wowed people?
Yeah, and I don't think this is it. I think this is fun for Sony fans and may catch a few eyes, but it's not a hit.
Last hit was that 4K video player that everyone loves. All 800. There's nobody who owns
hundred
it
of titles available for you to download. Let's talk about hits. Everybody's waiting for Apple to have a hit. Tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time, we'll be carrying coverage of the Apple announcement right here at live.twit.tv. And Wired, I think, has done something pretty interesting. They went and they got a British company that does odds makers, Ladbrokes, you may or may not be familiar with, to lay odds on what we're going to see tomorrow in that announcement. Of course, the iPhone 5S is at 1-4. So in other words, for every $4 you bet, you might win $1. That's pretty much like odds on favorite. We're going to get a 5S. Everybody knows that. The other stuff, though, gets a little longer. You got the iPhone 5C, iOS 7, maybe a new iPod Touch, iTunes Radio, possibly the end of the iPod Classic. Medium bets, a little longer shots than those. iPad mini with Retina display. Everybody thinks they'll probably save iPads for a separate announcement. OS 10, 10.9 Mavericks. The word on the street is it's not ready yet, and they might not make an announcement. And Macs, new MacBooks, new iMacs, the new Mac Pro. Are we going to get that date again? A lot of people feel that might be a separate announcement. And then you got your long shots, an Apple Watch or an Apple TV, which everybody says no. They're maybe going to do a software update to Apple TV, but they're not going to announce a new version of the product. Let's go around the horn and lay down your best bets. What do you think, other than the iPhone 5S, that you think Apple will announce that might get people excited tomorrow? Father Robert, we'll start with you.
Okay, so I mean, you're going to see the iOS refresh. You're probably going to see... I'm thinking they're going to update the Mini. I know the odds aren't great here, but I actually believe that it's time for them to have something new in that space, and the iPad Mini has been a decent seller for them, and they really want to increase percentage sales on the tablet side versus the phone side. Beyond that, I mean, I don't have a lot of guesses for the announcement. I know that whatever they announce, there's going to be an immediate backlash. There's going to be a lot of people who say there's going to be no innovation. There's going to be a lot of people who say, oh, well, Apple's dead. I know that whatever they announce is going to sell out, and they're going to make a ton of money, and that's pretty much all I can say about that.
I asked, the phrase on the invite is, this should brighten everyone's day. How are they going to brighten the day? Maybe an iPad mini with a Retina display.
Brightening is just going to be the colors, right? Because you see, even the invite's got a bunch of little dots with different colors. It's like, oh, this is pretty obvious, and we've seen so many leaks about this. This is actually exceptionally leaky. Just the past couple of years, Apple's just been kind of a mess when it comes to this. I'm thinking we're probably going to see much more of Mavericks, actually, with a release date for it, and potentially more about iOS 7. But I don't think, beyond iPhone and iOS 7 and just software, I don't see any hardware getting refreshed this time, because if they're going to bother with iPad, it's going to be a separate thing. And there's a rumor that iOS 7 for iPad is delayed anyway. So to show off a new iPad with the old iOS would look kind of crazy. So I'm thinking that might hold it off.
Well, I doubt that they would show it off with running iOS 6. But yes, it sounds like that's the case. iOS 7 for iPad just wasn't really put in the hands of developers at the same time. It's lagging behind. There are a lot of things with the animations and transitions that just aren't fully baked the way that, you know, they're a lot farther along for iPhone. I think that those colors on the invitation absolutely point to what the 5C, as it's being called, the colors it will be offered in. You can even see there are white circles that don't even really make sense on that invitation, except that I think that those colors actually are going to be the exact colors that we're going to see the 5C in. And you notice that you don't see any black circles. So these are like, you know, cute little vibrant plasticky iPhones. I don't think that we are going to get iPad hardware refreshing information tomorrow. I think that's going to come in October. I just don't see why Apple would combine its two biggest announcements of the year into one and then save October for the Mac Pros and Mavericks. I just don't think that's a big enough announcement on its own. Then again, Apple turned everything on its head a year ago. So it's going to be interesting to see how things play out.
That's where I'm putting my money, Sarah, is that they're going to change their pattern. They're going to change. They don't do everything the same way every time. So I think you're right. We're going to get the 5S. We're going to get the 5C. Those colors on the invite are going to be the colors of the 5C. My suspicion on that white circle that you're talking about, that silver ring, is that's the ring around the home button for the fingerprint sensor. We've seen some rumors about that, and that seems to fit with that. So that's me reading the tea leaves there. But I think might get an iPad mini with a Retina display and maybe even a MacBook Pro with a Retina display, even though they'll still have a separate iPad announcement later because it fits in with the whole
brightening. You mean MacBook Air with a Retina
display? Yeah, I'm sorry, MacBook. Yeah,
that'll be the day.
I was like, I've got one.
Yeah.
At home.
Misspoke there. Thank you for correcting. But yeah, we'll get some retina displays for products that have needed them.
Yeah.
In other words, because that brightens your day as well. And then they can save some big revelations about new products, like the announcement of Mac Pro, like OS X Mavericks, and new iPads, like actual new, like big iPads for later this fall.
Yeah.
That's where my money's at.
Yeah.
Facebook's money is in selling data to television, apparently.
Yeah, Facebook has so much data, and they're like, who wants it this time? Let's build some great tools. So two tools I mentioned in the news feed, the public feed API, and then the keyword insights API that are being offered to a select group of media partners right now. But one suspects if it all goes well, they'll open it up to others. CNN, NBC, Sky TV, BuzzFeed, The Guardian, Slate, and a social media analytics firm called Mass Relevance. I love the name of that. So the public feed API, kind of exactly what it sounds like. It's a fire hose of public posts. So on CNN, if they're saying, well, what are the people talking about now? You can kind of point to something on Facebook where it's all coming in real time, very Twitter-like. Then the Keyword Insights API is something that actually sets Facebook apart from Twitter in the sense, because Facebook just really has so much more rich data on so many more of its users. Aggregates of public posts mentioning a specific something. If you are looking to everybody who's talking about a particular news item, you know, something Syria related or something celebrity related, then Facebook says, well, we're not going to name anybody by names because that would be a privacy issue, but you can get the age, the aggregate age of everybody, location, gender of the posters, maybe certain news subjects seem to really resonate with females more than males, that sort of thing. And that's something that a news organization can use to their advantage. You know, they can spin the story that way. The VP of Media Partnerships at Facebook, Justin Ossofsky, says between 88 and 100 million Americans log on to Facebook between the hours of 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. So that's prime time news time. He says over 9 million people talked about the VMAs on Facebook, for example, Video Music Awards that aired on MTV a couple weeks ago. We wanted to give our broadcast partners a better picture of what's going on. Robert, Facebook obviously has a lot of data. Do you think that this is a good use of it? Do you think that this is going to... Right now, it's very much on trend to toss over to Twitter regularly if you're a CNN. Does this put Facebook on the on a level playing field?
I don't think so. Not yet. Just because Twitter, by its nature, because the messages are so short, because the tweets are so condensed, it's a lot easier to pull sound bites. And that's what their partners are looking for. When you think of a TV network, when you think of a radio network, they're looking for that particular hashtag that's going to lead them into the next story. Facebook kind of does that, but... not really. Facebook has a lot more information to sort through, but they don't have those imminently sellable hashtags. You can do it. You can start doing it, but Facebook users in general aren't trained to do it.
Right.
So, yes, can Facebook give them more in-depth information? Absolutely. Can Facebook give them a larger sample? Yes, absolutely. But can Facebook give them the things that their anchors want on primetime? Probably not. Not nearly as much as Twitter.
As you're reading off the facts of the story or explaining the story, it just sounds like you could just replace Facebook with Twitter and say this is about, you know, a couple years ago. It just sounds the exact same thing Twitter already does. The fact that they're adding this functionality is like, okay, well, they have a fire hose. Oh, there's a shock. And they want to do about TV events.
Well, but I mean, you don't necessarily know where someone's location or age is on Twitter unless you go to their profile and then you get it from what they've said. You know, I mean, my location says global. That doesn't tell you where I am unless you know me.
You're on Earth. That's good enough.
Well, that's true. I am not a alien from Mars.
Yes.
But Facebook does have richer information.
Well, that's true, because you have the idea of identity is associated with Facebook a lot more. You have a little bit more data if people are willing to give their real data there. So that is a good differentiator between Twitter and Facebook. Then again, there's so much integration between the two. You can have the short sellable hashtags because now Facebook does support mm-hmm. that. Cross-posting works really well. If Facebook can basically aggregate Twitter's data because it's being fed to Facebook and sell it and make money because they can tie it to somebody's identity, that's actually pretty smart. So we'll see where that goes.
Let's be honest here, though. None of these news organizations like CNN, NBC, Sky TV are making rigorous scientific use of the data they even get from Twitter. What they're doing is trying to look hip, look current, and have a little lipstick to put on their story to make it look like, hey, you know, we're finding out from Twitter. And I'm not saying the data they're getting is useless, but the data they're going to get from Facebook doesn't have to be better than Twitter. It just has to be there so they can say, hey, on Twitter, people are saying this. On Facebook, people are saying that. Look how in touch we are with all of you out there because we know you all use both of those. So I think this is better for the news agencies than it is for Facebook's marketing. It's good for Facebook's bottom line, though. Facebook can charge for this and make some more money. So it makes sense for both sides in that way from where I see it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, though, is when you think about what's more useful in a broadcast, 100-plus characters is a lot better than a long Facebook post. Now, if you actually want to dive deep, if you have a show that has a format where you could actually say, hey, here's a Facebook post that went a paragraph or two that really dives into the issues, that really shows off what the public opinion, the public sentiment might be, then yeah, Facebook is better. But otherwise, if you're just looking for talking heads, if you're just looking for, as you said, the lipstick, Twitter still has it in the bag.
I think, honestly, this is good for news organizations and good for Facebook because there's a little bit of a public perception thing going on where, ooh, if it's a news-related thing, then that's what people talk about on Twitter. Facebook is more for connections and friends and family. And if you start, you know, if you're watching a lot of news and you start hearing Facebook people are talking about this, then even if it's not really a conscious thing, you may start behaving that way yourself. And so that Facebook loves the idea of that because that means you're just on Facebook for one more reason.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor for today's show, Squarespace. You don't like the news? Go out and start your own news website or maybe your online portfolio or your gallery. You know how much we like Squarespace. Squarespace is the platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. And we would like to check out some of your sites. Lots of you have been sending sites. We've talked about a few of them. We're getting more than we could possibly talk about. And they're great sites. So here's what you do. If you've got a website you're using on Squarespace and you haven't done this yet, send a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website and use the hashtag #TwitSquarespace. We'll take a look and we could choose your Squarespace site to mention in a future episode. Also, if you're like, I want to see what some of these sites are, go out and search on that hashtag. You can see a bunch of great examples. Squarespace is always improving their platform. We talk all about their beautiful designs, how they can make your site look professionally designed with award-winning designs. They've won the FWA, the Webby's, Forbes Awards. It's increasingly easier to use all the time. I don't know how they do it. They also have an amazing support team that's there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the thing that you know I love is the mobile-ready design, so that my site looks and makes sense correctly on a small screen and a big screen. They're also search engine optimized. They host the thing, so you don't have to mess with that if you don't want to worry about it. But you don't have to take my word for it. Start a trial with no credit card required. Start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT9, and you'll get 20% off and show your support for Tech News Today. 20% off. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. All right, we got a new browser on the iPad. We mentioned it in the news fuse called Opera Coast. I'm going to try to show it off a little bit here, and then we can chat about it. It's an attempt by Opera. They're still making Opera Mini, but it's an attempt by Opera to actually create a tablet native interface. They're redoing the UI. So you see they've got all these like bookmarks, like tiles on a home screen. And then you can go into a, actually I'll go back there. You can go and search, or you can enter a URL at the top, or you can use one of your previously visited. I just visited Ars Technica. Now I can go in there. You go back and forth by swiping like that, rather than actually using a back or front button. The only button you see on the home screen is this little, or when you're in a page, I'm sorry, is this little home screen button and this little button here, which shows you recently visited. Now, it's not tabs. It's just here are all the sites you visited previous to the site you're looking at now. You can save a bunch of different screens. It's almost a Windows-like tile interface where you can group the tiles of the different sites that you like. I think this is very interesting from a how do you browse in a tablet point of view. But I'm interested in what you guys think of this as a browser. It's WebKit-based, and it's on iOS. Father Robert, what do you think?
Well, you know, the first thing I have to say is it looks a lot like Surface. It looks a lot like Windows 8, which is not a bad thing. I like what they're trying to do. I mean, when you think about where our current browser paradigm comes from, it comes from the days before even laptops were all that popular. So finally someone has come out and said, okay, well, it's tablets now. It's touch devices. It's phones. It's large screens that allow us to swipe back and forth. So the fact that they're trying to figure out if there's a better format for that paradigm, I like that. But looking at this, I didn't like Windows 8, the Metro at least, and I don't like Surface, so I'm not sure how much I'm going to like this.
You know, the whole flicking back and forth between open tabs, Chrome does that too, on iOS anyway. It's kind of nice. Once you get used to it, it's great to have the functionality, but it certainly, when you were just showing that off, Tom, I was like, I'm familiar with that gesture, but I like it. I'm kind of with you, Robert. The tiles they look nice. They seem in concept like, oh, you can group your stuff. And Tom, you're a very organized person. I was looking at your tabs and it's like, you've got your sort of fun social stuff. Then you got your news sources. Then you have, you know, long.
Those were just the defaults, by the way.
Oh, really? I was like, pretty good. Good on you, Tom. Okay, well, good on you, Opera, then. At least they're getting everybody started on the right foot. But it's like, I don't know. I mean, how much is everyone really going to customize that stuff? I feel like we tend to just default back to open up the browser and just start searching. You know, or where you have feeds or that sort of thing. But I think it looks really nice, and I think it's great that we have yet another browser option.
Yeah, I was reading the interview on TechCrunch about this Opera browser. It's not for the power user. That's what they were saying. It's for the casual user.
Yeah.
And it screams casual. You have very limited functionality. It's about just consuming all you want. But the weird thing is a lot of these, this like tiled interface, all of these sites have apps at this point, so the idea that you would just bookmark them in a browser instead of just getting the app for ESPN or YouTube seems a little strange to me. Because if it's for the casual person, aren't they just getting the apps anyway? What's the deal with the browser?
Well, and if you use an app like YouTube regularly, if you used Chrome, you can have in your settings to open in the YouTube mm-hmm. app when you click on a YouTube link rather than the browser. So that's kind of a nice thing you've got going on. You can't do that for Coast.
I think you guys are totally nailing it. This is a good casual browser, and I think it's a great attempt by Opera to say, how do you use a browser casually on an iPad? Let's design for that. And I think they did a good job. My only problems are that I'm a power user. I want to be able to see two of the browser windows at once. I want to be able to keep a tab open with a particular website in it and then open other tabs, which I can do in a Safari and I can do in Chrome. You can't keep a tab persistent in Opera Coast. And I also want to make a browser default in iOS, and that's not Opera's fault. You just can't do that in iOS. So this is not for me, but maybe it doesn't need to be. Maybe a lot of people will catch on to this and say, you know what, this is really simple, it's really easy to use, and I like the visual representation. It's not a bad move by Opera. And it really cool to me to see somebody innovating in the design of browser interface, even if this isn't a winner for me. That's good progress. We need to see that for sure. We also need innovation in license plates, right, Sarah?
That's right, Tom. I started to laugh when I first started reading the story, and then I quickly got really terrified. So here's the deal. California State Senate has approved a bill called SB 806 that would create the first electronic license plate in the U.S. Now, Governor Jerry Brown would still need to sign this bill. It has not completely been passed. California is also not the only state to be working on an idea like this. New Jersey and South Carolina are a couple of others. However, here's how it would work. The plate would just be a screen that would wirelessly receive updates on some sort of a mobile network from a central server to display information like, for example, stolen or expired for people like me who often...
Bad driver.
Who often, yeah, let their whole stuff lapse. Or, you know, some sort of an Amber Alert situation. You could think, wow, there are certain cases where this would be really, really helpful. The program would be limited, even if it goes forward, to a pilot program using less than 1%, about 0.5% of registered vehicles. It would be set to be completed no later than the 1st of January 2017. So the pilot program would be for a few years, even if it gets started. However, as you can imagine, there are a lot of privacy advocates that are saying, well, this is pretty much the worst idea in the world. Lee Tien, a staff attorney over at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, says, within the pilot, the DMV would not be receiving any location information, so that would be good. However, quote, but the company that operates the plates would have access to, and they're going to be controlling what's on the plates. Now, Artenio Armenta, gosh, I've got all the names today, who is a spokesperson over at the DMV, tells Ars Technica that postage is costing the DMV over $20 million per year. And if we move to an electronic model, I guess you'd have to first offset the cost of how much those electronic plates would be to have installed in your car at the beginning. Somehow the DMV thinks, well, we're going to end up making money off of getting rid of our whole stamps thing. But conceivably, everywhere you ever go for, you know, until the end of time would be recorded. And it's almost like some sort of a wiretap that's on your car from the outset. Robert, are you scared? Do you think this is a good idea? Or do you see?
I want this so badly just because I want to see how quickly I can hack the thing. you know, we're headed into something like this. The fact that you've got a digital license plate doesn't mean that now they're going to be tracking you. They've been tracking you beforehand. I mean, if you go across the bridges in the Bay Area here, even if you don't have a fast track toll taker, your license plate automatically gets recorded by the cameras and they can tell you, well, we'll send you the toll. So what we're looking at here from the technology side is it's probably going to be some sort of e-ink screen, both to keep down the cost and to keep it readable in the daylight. It will probably have some sort of, you know, very low speed 2G cellular network connection powered off of the accessory lights on the back of your car. And it will probably have a GPS tracker, not necessarily because they want to be able to know where your vehicle is at all time, although I'm sure they want that possibility. But to keep the things from getting stolen. I mean, if there wasn't a way to find out where they were, people would be unscrewing these things from cars all the time because they seem to be really cool pieces of tech. So, you know, am I afraid? Not really, because it's not going to give them any more information that they don't already have. The geek side of me really wants to see it. And honestly, I like the fact that they're at least looking forward and saying either we deal with this now or we're going to get hit by it in the future.
I think that the privacy concerns are real, but I think there's also a way to do this without having location tracking. And frankly, if it gets stolen, you make it display stolen if somebody takes the plates. And then there are ways to do it that would brick the thing. Yes, anything with an internet connection can conceivably be tracked, but so many cars have internet connections. So many people who drive cars have phones in their pockets. There are already plenty of ways to track you anyway. So if you lock this down and say, you know what, it's not going to have GPS in it, it may be only can be connected when you press a button. So you'll get an email that says, time to update your license plate. Go press a button. I don't know. I think there's ways to do this that limit the privacy concerns. And I think it's probably the least concerning part of a car. I mean, we got Daimler saying they're going to do self-driving cars by 2020 now. Nissan's been saying that. Google obviously wants that to happen. Self-driving cars, to me, have loads more privacy implications than an e-ink driver's license plate on the back of your car.
Well, isn't the concern that the government is the actual thing that's tracking you or the company that has the plates? Because if you're talking about Nissan having a self-driving car, you're
right, because
or
the government obviously needs license plates to track you. They can't find any other way.
Well, the idea that they're tracking your location, I think this freaks out people. But then again, as a nerd, I'm looking into the idea of the hackability. But the thing about it is if this is made out of any standardized like e-ink or whatever, it just seems like you would just hack a Kindle to put on the back of your car that says nothing all the time. Like there's no real reason to have this unless it really does save that money. $20 million a year could actually be enough of an impetus for California is not exactly known for having a lot of money right now. If they could save money any which way, that probably would do it. But the implementation seems like it'd be weird. The installation seems like it'd be weird. It'd probably have to be regulated so that every car manufacturer embed this in their car.
See, I think we're all missing the big picture here, and that is the future application of this license plate is you install NFC, so you have to bump the car ahead of you in order to exchange data. Yes?
Nice. Yeah. Well, you automatically would exchange your insurance information as soon as you bump the car. All right, let's finish up with Microsoft. They announced a Surface 2 event coming up September 23rd in New York, and we got some other Surface news as well, I asked.
Yeah, Surface news surfacing. Neowen reports that Surface Pro and Surface Pro 2 is going to get a desktop docking station. Now, Neowen says the dock's going to make it a lot easier to attach a keyboard, a mouse, and external display. Now, the site didn't have a price or release date, and they expected it to be a part of Microsoft Surface Update, which now we know is on the 23rd of September. Now, Paul Thrott's got some details about the dock as well. It's going to work for both the Pro and the Pro 2, not the Surface RT or the RT2, which is fun to say. Paul also says the design is, quote, kind of a hulking device where the Surface Pro / 2 slides in at an angle and is held in place by arms on the side that are pulled out to release the tablet. Seems kind of neat. On the port side, we're talking about a USB 3.0 port, 3 USB 2.0, 1 gigabit Ethernet, mini display port, dedicated microphone and headphone ports. Padre seems like it'd be the ultimate machine if the Pro or the Pro 2 can be a tablet, a laptop, sort of, and then a desktop. It's the ultimate thing. But do people want the ultimate thing?
For the right price, they do. Now, the first thing we have to do is remember, divorce this from the RT, the stink that is the Surface RT. That's a toy. The Surface Pro is actually a full-feature laptop. And so if you can give it a decent dock, it actually can be used as a full-featured laptop. And it's a half-decent tablet. So, yes, do people want the ultimate thing? Absolutely. But not at the price that the Surface Pro is currently selling. You know, you're going to have to see that actually drop down into the $400-$500 range before people are going to pay another, say, $300 for a decent dock.
I mean, you have a USB port on the Surface right now, and I got excited about that when I first got my RT because I was like, oh, a USB hub with a monitor, mouse and keyboard, boom, I've got myself a dock already. I think people would be more excited about this possibility already and then saying, oh, and a dock is going to make it even more, make it even easier. I don't think that this is the kind of killer feature that sways anyone who doesn't like the Surface currently into suddenly liking it.
Well, would people get super, I always like to think about this. If Apple did this, would people be like, psyched, this is amazing. I have an iPad dock, I can make it a thing. Are people just getting less excited because it's Microsoft? Again, they have the Surface, which has been received kind of lukewarmly. If this was an Apple product, would people be psyched about this?
I mean, it would be nice if the iPad had even a keyboard that wasn't some sort of a third-party thing. That would be great. That would be a start. So, yeah, I mean, I think this all-in-one idea where you've got this tablet, as long as you're sold on the tablet with all of these extras, seems like a great idea. I don't know how many people say, well, this is going to be my main computer, so I definitely want that external display when I walk into work because I don't have another computer. But if you wanted to go in that direction, it's certainly nice to have. I don't know if this would be so much more attractive if a different company did it. I don't think that part of it is Microsoft working against itself there. It seems,
yeah, I don't
it seems
know
if, all right.
I don't know if saying people would be excited about an Apple product if Apple did anything tells us that much, because Apple fanboys get excited about pretty much everything. I mean, Father Robert made
Are
that
you calling
point
me
when we
a
were
boy?
Talking earlier. No, I was not. In fact, I wasn't referring to you at all, hence the name.
Okay. Just
but
checking.
I do think that, you know, yeah, sure. Point taken. As if Apple comes out with a dock, a bunch of people get very excited. But Apple comes out with anything, a bunch of people get very excited. My point was, Microsoft already beat Apple with the USB port. You could do so much more with the Surface already. And yet there's still whatever it is about the Surface. And maybe it is just Microsoft having a bad image in a lot of people's mind. Maybe it's not. It's just not the thing that's captured folks' imagination yet.
It's funny because I've wanted something like this forever. Like since the UMPC came out, I was like, this is the thing. I can dock this, finally make it, or the OQO, something that can be carried around and then you can actually make it a desktop or a laptop. I'm just curious about the execution because the Surface seemed kind of neat, but the execution seems strange as a laptop. It's not really a laptop. It kind of, as long as you're kind of sitting perfectly still and maybe you have a lap desk, it's a laptop. But there's some execution aspects I don't really like about it.
You know, it's the dock concept is great because it lets you think, oh, I can use this everywhere. I'll have a dock at home. I'll have a dock at the office. But what it comes down to is, ultimately, we want to be able to carry it with us. And if I'm always thinking, well, do I carry the dock? Do I not carry the dock? Do I carry the peripherals? Do I not carry the peripherals? It's not as useful to us. So we may get excited about it in theory, but when it comes to execution, something like this, for most people, for non-geeks, for people who just want to compute, it's going to seem like an unnecessary confusion.
Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Ting. Ting, you hear a lot about phone companies saying, oh, we're going to be friendlier to people now, and we're not going to have as many rules. We're going to make it easy. Ting's been doing this for years. Ting's like, we came up with this idea. We've been friendly to the customer. We haven't been hostile to the customer since we start. We have only ever charged you for what you use. Ting has no contracts. They have no early termination fee. It is a truly and completely contract fee. You may hear other people say, oh, it's there's no contract. Check and see. There may be no contract. But with Ting, you get no early termination fees, no other BS, no bundling, no ride-along services, no just pay us a little extra for this to get this thing, no overcharges or penalties, no add-on charges for things like voicemail or caller ID or tethering. One company charges you extra to actually limit one of the account members on your phone. Forget all that stuff. No mysterious line items on your bill and unlimited devices on one plan. So you don't have to pay extra to have a family plan. You just have as many devices as you want on one plan. You share the minutes, the messages, the megabytes, and each device on a plan just costs a flat $6 a month. They have a great online account control panel. They have no hold customer support. You call 1-855-TING-FTW anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern. You get a real person that'll pick up the phone. You don't have to guess menus or hack the menus, anything like that. You purchase your mobile device from Ting. You'll get it in 2 to 5 business days. Activate your device with Ting. Have the option to select a new phone number or port an existing one, just like any other cell phone company. And Ting will break your rates out by minutes, text messages, and megabytes and bill you at the end of the month for what you've used. And that's not like the other cell phone companies. Save money and better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. Visit Ting today. Go to TNT.ting.com. You can check out their savings calculator, see how much you or your company can save. You'll be impressed. And Tech News Today viewers, because you're listening or watching the show, save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up. So go to that URL, TNT.ting.com, and start saving today. Let's move on to the randomizer. It is straw poll time. We had artist recreating Iron Man's suit with the least likely materials. Those materials were balloons. That got 45% of the vote in our live audience. But with 55% of the vote, is Google revamping its logo? Hints appear in the new Chrome beta for Android. And wow, is that on my Skype return feed almost identical? No,
it's flatter.
Exactly.
That's devils be gone.
Trend, right? Yeah. And there's not the same primary color. It's a little bit more of a muted tone to those colors, I think.
I think it's just the drop shadow that it's missing, so it looks a little bit lighter. But I think the colors are about the same.
They're not far off, for sure.
Why does everyone just have to do the same stuff? Well, one company says it's all about flattened graphics, so everybody's got to do that because that's what it's like fashion.
Yeah, but Yahoo just added
tech fashion.
Yahoo added bevels to every single freaking letter in Yahoo.
That's true.
Minus the exclamation
point.
Nobody
liked that one either.
So it's a conservation of beveling. Okay, so Yahoo took them. Google's going to get rid of them. Everything's fine.
We've been seeing a lot of relogoing.
They looked at this and realized it would save them a certain amount of money because it would render faster or something.
There's probably some truth to that.
Well, we saw HP go from a blue to a slightly lighter blue, and they spent upwards of like $60 million to make that happen across the company. Mm-hmm. Microsoft switched their logo to the Microsoft logo, but flat. Now we've got Google doing it. I mean, there is this trend to, the only thing wrong with your company is your brand. People don't recognize your logo, which I really don't understand. I got to think there's a PR firm out there that's just making book on all these companies changing their logo just that little bit.
Yeah, an itinerant logo designer going from company to company. Let's see what's on the calendar.
Oh, fine. Well, we should remind you that TNT is actually, for all the live viewers and listeners, we're going to start an hour and a half earlier than usual. So that's 8:30 a.m. Pacific time. Could not be happier about that myself.
Wait, we're doing what now?
Yeah, you have to come in an hour and a half earlier tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, that's happening. Apple coverage is starting at 9:30. The actual event itself isn't scheduled to kick off till 10, but we want to be sort of live and chatting about it. So TNT has graciously decided to come in earlier. It's going to be a fun day tomorrow, so everybody's excited about that. Hope you can join us. But who really cares about an Apple event when you have the Intel Developer Forum that is also happening tomorrow in San Francisco? Mm-hmm. That runs through Thursday the 12th. And looking ahead to February, a PlayStation 4 is coming to Japan on February 22nd, which is 3 months after its U.S. launch.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Les. He says, "Hey, TNT folks, love the show. I listened with interest to your coverage in TNT 834 on Chrome apps. Disclaimer, I'm a web developer at the Mozilla Corporation. That said, I wanted to mention that most of what you covered on Chrome apps also applies to Mozilla's open web apps and Firefox. We're building a web-based apps ecosystem that works across mobile and desktop, as well across OSs and browsers. We have our marketplace and apps sync between devices. Like Chrome, Firefox on desktop can install web apps and launch them as desktop applications with their own windows and taskbar icons, etc. Firefox on Android can install the same apps and launch them from the home screen. I'm not sure how closely Chrome apps are tied to the Chrome-only APIs, but an explicit goal of Mozilla's open web apps is that all of our platform APIs are or become public standards. At worst, they start in Firefox and then are proposed as web standards. We're hoping to get other vendors like Google on board so that web apps are really web apps and not locked to specific browsers. So overall, I just wanted to say, hey, don't forget about us. We're doing the same things.
Thank you for writing in, Les. We have talked about this before on the show, and I'm kicking myself for not remembering to bring it up when we talked about the Chrome apps the other day on the show. So good reminder. Really appreciate you writing in, Les. And that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you, Father Robert Ballesaire, for joining us today. What's happening on TWiET today?
Oh, well, you know, we're talking a little bit about the Microsoft Nokia deal. We're probably going to be discussing some remote network deployment. Oh, and by the way, we've got a guest, the father of IPTV. You know, all this stuff that you're watching? Yeah, he's going to be in studio.
Wait, IPTV had a dad?
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Awesome. Check it out. This Week in Enterprise Tech, either live later today on TWiET or always available on demand at twit.tv/TWIET. Thank you, Father Robert Ballesaire. Don't forget, you can also help us figure out our coverage. Technewstoday.reddit.com is the place to go to vote and to submit links as well. You can also be with us all the time on the web as well, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT show. Don't forget that early start live tomorrow, although we'll wait until after the Apple announcement to post the show, so it'll be a little later in the post so we can get that Apple news in there. Dave Berlin will be our guest tomorrow morning. We'll see you then.